Hey everybody, absolutely fantastic episode of the Daily Bone podcast today. We discuss the latest fantasy top tournament launch and what cards are active on the platform. We talk about Blast meme coin Pac Moon reaching a new all-time high. And then we are joined by Armani Ferrante, the founder of Backpack Exchange and the Mad Lads NFT collection. We discuss being a crypto founder with him, an NFT founder, really and everything in between. It's a fascinating conversation. Mad Lads is the number one NFT project on Solana. Overall, it's a great conversation with him. Hope you enjoy it. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Daily Bone podcast. Tuesday, May 7th, here to discuss all things crypto markets. That includes Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, meme coins, and of course, NFTs. Lot to chat about today. We are going to discuss the latest fantasy top tournament launch and how cards are actually traded on the platform. We're going to discuss Blast meme coin Pac Moon reaching a new all-time high. And lastly, we'll be joined by a very, very special guest. The founder of the Mad Lads NFT collection, the consensus number one NFT collection on the Solana blockchain, and the Backpack Exchange, Armani Ferrante himself. I don't believe Armani has done an interview in a little bit, so we're very excited to have him on. Going to discuss building products on Solana and the future of the Backpack Exchange. So we're going to be getting into that shortly here. He'll be on the show a little bit later on. I wanted to call some attention to Nick. Nick, it looks like your handle that you have here on the video is actually incorrect.
Oh, wow. That is a good point there. Yeah, I'm no longer all Nick. I'm Choose Rich. As I was thinking about it, you know, I'm wondering if I'm going to regret this, you know, down the road, but I like it for now.
Why would you regret it?
The one thing I'll say is, like, your handle is, like, your username is reflective of, like, your name, you know what I'm saying, versus a brand. I like it. It's different than all Nick, basically.
It becomes a part of you. It definitely becomes a part of you. Like, not seeing all Nick when I saw Choose Rich, I was like, oh man, I got to get used to this. But I like it. I like it a lot. I'm not going to lie. When I first saw it, I was like, this kind of hits.
It's provocative.
I think it's good when you're like having a conversation with somebody and you're like out at the bar. And dude, I always get flooded with women saying, what's your Twitter handle? I don't know. I just meet them at the bar. What's your Twitter handle, Nick? And I tell them. Now I'm gonna just be like, it's Choose Rich. You know,
that's definitely good. It's also on brand with a lot of crypto people having their name not be like an actual name. Like, you know what I mean? It's like more just like a phrase. Like, I was doing a little karate combat video yesterday and I was doing David Hoffman. His Twitter handle is Trustless State. That's not like, you know, Big Dog 22. It's like a phrase, you know. Yours is now Choose Rich. It's a pretty damn good phrase. And if someone goes, what's your handle? And you just go Choose Rich. I do like that.
I don't even need to box David Hoffman now in order to just absolutely shit on him the way that I just have with my username. It's just a presence, you know, it's a thing.
No numbers. You know, we're going to meet him. Underscore. Oh dude, it's clean. Like, Choose Rich is so clean.
Oh, Choose Rich is definitely clean. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, congratulations, Nick. I think I told you that I didn't like the idea, like literally right before you did it. And then as soon as I saw it, I was like,
Jack Clemente and Easy were all on board with it. And I was like 3-1.
Yeah. No. And then as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I actually really like that. I think I wasn't framing it as it was going to be Nick's. I thought you were talking about getting the Choose Rich thing and either just squatting on it or having it become like another brand. And in my head, I was like, we don't need another brand account. I didn't think you were going to go all in and dump all Nick and get Choose Rich, which I like. I like it.
I'm not even NFT Nick anymore.
Right? Dude, which is good.
What are NFTs? You know, what are NFTs? I don't know any. I'm just kidding.
Nick, serious question.
I think you just need to update it on your Instagram, though, because like if you're out in the bar and someone's asking, like you said, they're not going to.
I can't talk about what's going on with my Instagram stuff because there's stuff in play right now. Okay. We don't talk about that right now. That's an update for a later
Do you still have all Nick? Like, do you still have a presence that owns that app?
Of course he does.
On Twitter?
Yeah, there's no way he'd let that go.
Are you kidding?
I gave it to somebody else.
Well, I just wanted to make sure there wasn't someone who immediately sniped it or something crazy, and now there's just an all Nick floating out there.
You think Nick would ever let...
an all Nick, and it's me. Yeah. One of our... there was like a company account we had wanted to set up. We have so many Twitter accounts. We didn't need the username.
Nick literally treats Twitter accounts like digital real estate. If you thought for a second a domain was going to slip away from Nifty Nick, then you're out of your mind. You do not know who he is. Clemente, are we not doing the thing that's on the call?
Weather report.
We are. We are. You just... Nick.
There we go. Beautiful, beautiful. Nick literally deleted it. That makes sense. So look, ladies and gentlemen, before we get into the weather report, and it was great to obviously hear about Nick's rebrand as Choose Rich, which I fully back. I think it's awesome. As part of our collaboration with Polygon, I wanted Easy to basically bring us up to speed on some of the biggest announcements from Polygon this week. We have Polygon announcing, a couple of new things. Easy, what do we got? What are you looking at here?
Yeah, the main thing that like caught me totally by surprise was to actually see Maiden, which is their new alpha testnet, went live. So it's all about privacy. So for those that are familiar with like privacy layers, ZK rollups, speed of transactions, they've rolled out this testnet called Maiden, where now users have the ability to post what's called a private and a public note. So information that other users can see and information that only you can see or select individuals. So it's all about doing this privacy play that I'm a huge fan of. I think that this is actually a way to scale like business opportunities for those that, yes, it's a public ledger, that's the emphasis of a blockchain, but there's still data that people want to keep close to the chest, in-house, and not open up to a wider audience. And that's what Maiden actually allows for. So seeing this testnet go live, it's still in the early stages, but private notes and public notes can now be shared. Private accounts and public accounts can be shared. So you can give access for things that people can see, but also things that only you can see or internal resources can see, select individuals. Then on top of that, they still have some simple smart contracts that you can do. So minting tokens, sending and receiving assets, and building a faucet for other users to start testnet applications on. So I'm a huge fan of what they're doing here. I've been a big fan of privacy chains and privacy coins. And seeing the Maiden Alpha testnet go live shows that Polygon's actually continuing to scale and try new things, which on top of it will be connected to the aggregation layer, which conjoins all of their different ecosystems into one place. So using the ag layer with now a privacy chain, in my opinion, opens up a ton of opportunities for traditional businesses to feel more comfortable with blockchain technology and information that's non-changeable, embedded on a chain, and can still be kept somewhat private so that they can actually maintain privacy and data regulation laws as well. So I'm a huge fan of what they're doing with this. I think it's absolutely going to crush. And then on top of that, we also got an announcement
quick, I want to get to the second announcement, but the cool thing about that too is because it's like a privacy focused product, you don't have to pay your taxes with that, right?
No, absolutely not. God, no. You know, like that's the best part. The businesses know how much they've made and earned, but they keep it close to this chest. Sam from, Uncle Sam, he's not touching it. So yeah, right. Absolutely. That's the real winner here.
And SBF, this would have been perfect for him. Unfortunately, he got caught.
SBF would not have been a Solana Maxi. He would have been a Polygon Maxi if he could have used Maiden. You know what I'm saying?
He also could have been a smarter criminal. He was just a complete idiot with it. So, I mean, there were a lot of flaws in the entire plan.
There we go.
Yeah, just a couple. Then the other thing I want to talk about is Wilder World's new announcement. Obviously, I've been like a diehard gamer and seeing some things continue to cook there. So they just rolled out new wallet connections for rewards, a brand new user interface across the website and gameplay itself, and then, of course, a leaderboard. So with this brand new update on their V3.3, it gives you new ways to enter and connect Wild rewards. So as you play the game, they have this play-to-airdrop, play-to-earn campaign going on for their Wild token, which is doing fairly well right now. Of course, Wilder World does hold a little bit of a special place to me and Clemente's heart. The entire game is based on Miami. So they've replicated the entire city of Miami in-game, the whole thing. Buildings can be owned, floors can be owned. So I will probably end up owning Clemente's apartment in-game, much like I do in real life. So I'm extremely excited about that part. And then on top of it, all these different components for like leaderboard filtering and ways to actually see where you rank and stand in the gameplay itself. So Wilder World's absolutely dominating. They're rolling out that subnet as well down the line and just crushing it, man. It's awesome to see gaming continue to trend on Polygon, privacy chains on Polygon. The development efforts right now are just a huge home run for the entire ecosystem.
I mean, monster shout out to Polygon. Shout out to Wilder World. We've had them on the show before. Definitely building some really cool stuff. If you're listening, you want to check this stuff out, follow OX Polygon on Twitter to be up to date on everything going on in the Polygon ecosystem. Lots going on. Very exciting stuff. Love to see Ethereum layer 2s continuing to scale, but also to compete Love to see the competition. That's the benefit of having an open network. Really good stuff. Sig, we got to keep cooking. Let's get into this weather report Tuesday, May 7th, and then we're going to start discussing a lot of
absolutely stuff. Absolutely, Pio. We got that ETH market volume coming at 12.2. We got Solana market volume coming in at 4.3. And on the Ordinal side, it's at 3.3 million. Onto the market leaders. Well, Gold Melio, which is a refundable mint, that is up at 0.47 ETH. You've got Crypto Valley's Adventurers. They're up also at 0.21. Basically, everything over on Blast looking green. On the Ethereum side of things, though, you've got Clonex. That is up to 0.55. Little Pudgy's also back over 1 ETH. And on Solana DeGods, however, they are down to 50 SOL. And finally, on the Ordinal side of things, you've got Rune Pups. They're down 17% to 0.07 BTC. On the Crypto Roundup, the majors are slightly down despite a second day of solid Bitcoin ETF inflows. Bitcoin is up 1% to 63,600. Ethereum is down to just around 3,000. And Solana is even on the day at 155. On the meme coin side of things, it's pretty much a mixed bag. You got the winners on Solana side. That was Peony. That is up to 17 million market cap. And Pacmoon on a ripper to a new all-time high. But the biggest losers on the day were Pups. They're down 25%. And Base Meme Coin higher. It's not going high. It's down 20%. Over the past 24 hours, first top three stories were obviously Fantasy Tops. Main tournament, it went live yesterday. Saw almost 18,000 players enter decks. This reduced the effective supply by almost half, and we saw the floor prices of almost every single card appreciate. Fantasy also distributed 1.2 million in rolls to the heroes. On the AI blockchain side of things, platform Spectral opened their Spec token claim yesterday to Farcaster users, Pudgy holders, and holders of select Artbox collections. Spec is currently trading at 21 million market cap, so that was a nice little airdrop for some people. And finally, Yuga Labs announced that The Legend of Mara Season 3 has ended at noon Eastern today. The new Mara steward Faraway teased two upcoming games in development, a web-based gaming targeting degens, and a mobile-first gaming targeting mass market adoption. That is all for the weather report. It is back to you folks in the studio.
Fantastic weather report as usual. Signal some updates from the Daily Bone newsletter. It's emailed to anyone that subscribes at dailybones.com. First story, Robinhood CEO Vlad Tenev responded to the SEC's Wells notice. Get this, threatening to use Robinhood's resources to contest the matter in the courts. Developing a little bit of a backbone here. Got to think that, you know, the overlords of Robinhood told Vlad, let's go right at him. Let's push back on the SEC. So very cool to see that. Next story, Tensor token, that's ticker TNSR, claim for power users has gone live. So make sure that you check that out. The Twitter account is the Tensor Foundation. That's at TensorFDN. Definitely go and check that out. Next story, $130 billion wealth management firm Hightower disclosed $68 million in Bitcoin ETF holdings. You're going to see a lot more disclosures like that coming over the next 3 years. Next story, UK-based investment platform Revolut, Signal knows this one, launched a standalone crypto platform called Revolut X for retail traders. Love to see it. This is essentially the Robinhood of Europe. Absolutely love to see it. Last story, modular L2 blockchain Mode opened up Mode, ticker M-O-D-E, token claim today. Who gets this? Who gets Mode? Easy Clemente? We don't know?
I have not even heard about this one, to be honest. Scroll up. I think it actually just showed you where it was right there. It said Mode airdrop. One and airdrop two Mode token. No, yeah, it doesn't even say. Airdrop one concludes the 5th of May, so it ended yesterday. But I have not even heard of Mode. The other one I hadn't heard of was Spectral.
That's the type of research I'm talking about.
Ray said it's just users of the actual blockchain.
Okay, our lead researcher, Ray, has weighed in. He also wrote that story. He said users of their blockchain. So if you ever use the Mode blockchain, you got a little...
hell has used Mode?
I think you'd be surprised.
Hey, Nick, you're not in the trenches, man. You got to get in the trenches. Bachelor Society says he's informing it. Bachelor Society,
you make some money. Did you claim your Spectral airdrop?
I just found out about it this morning. I will try to do this. I saw that there were several requirements involved in the airdrop. So as soon as I see that, I go, I
gave it to Pudgy Penguins. So you own a Pudgy, you can claim it. You click a button. It tells you, well, okay. So there's two buttons. I'm sorry. There's two buttons. The first one confirms that you are the owner of the wallet. Second one then lets you claim the tokens that you're rewarded. It'll pop after you sign the wallet. It says, here's how many tokens you got. Then there's your claim. I got like $400 or $500 from it.
I was going like, to say, it's going to be like,
crazy.
Easy. Was that from, what was that from? Because I know there was certain criteria. There's Pudgies, there's Farcaster. And there was, okay. And there was also for anyone who still holds them, like the art blocks, some of the art blocks, OG stuff, like Squiggles, Fidenzas, that kind of stuff. So it was, I know it was a mixed bag. Do you know Little Pudgies were on that list or not? They're usually weren't. Left out.
They weren't. Yeah, Little Pudgies were left on the sidewalk for this one. Big Pudgies got all the rewards per usual.
Well, there you go. We'll see how many dollars come my way. Quickly, someone wanted to mention the Ohio State graduation, the commencement speaker getting booed for pitching Bitcoin to a bunch of Gen Z brats. Can't say that I'm super surprised by the response. And the immediate response is Michael Saylor literally, we don't even have to watch the video. He basically says that he's been looking into Bitcoin for 6 months and all the kids in the audience are like, "Bull." It's actually a good thing because it means that if you have any understanding of Bitcoin, you can front run all the people in the audience. Michael Saylor literally in his recent speaking engagement said, let them take 10 years to figure it out. That's how you 100X. Absolutely love to hear that mentality, which is 1,000%.
Did you hear the rest of what that guy said though about it? He just found Bitcoin a couple months ago. Yep. And it was after he went on a long ayahuasca trip. So he did a bunch of ayahuasca, found out what Bitcoin was, and just became absolutely hooked. So
dude, he's messing with them. Yeah, he's a new coiner, but he's messing with them. I love to hear that kind of stuff. That's awesome. Shout out to all those graduates of Ohio State. They'll remember this for a long time. And when 10 years, when they're 32 years old, they'll remember it. Look, first story, Pac-Moon's token, ticker PAC, hit a new all-time high market cap of $43 million this morning with a fully diluted value of $120 million. In a tweet this morning, OSF, friend of the show, compared Blast's upside potential and felt the same way when seeing Bonk at only a $100 million market cap. Nick, you said that you bought more PAC over the weekend. What are your price targets? What do you got?
I mean, I think the market cap was like $30 million or something like that. It was something like insanely low.
It's going to 50 cents.
So at least a few hundred million would be my target. I think like $350 to $500 million would be like a nice target with this. It's a no-brainer. I don't know that I bought enough, frankly, but I have a lot on. I also just migrated a bunch of ETH over to Blast as well. I don't know if Clemente's advice has been good or not, but I also bought a couple of those cards yesterday, which you can't use for some reason in
the tournament already started.
No. I'm not talking about playing the game. You can't use them as assets in your lotto thing.
Yes, you can. So go into Fantasy Top. Hit the wallet in the top, go over to security and then export, and it'll give you a private key. And then what you do is you move that private key into MetaMask. And once you have it in MetaMask, you can connect it on blast.io's airdrop. And then what it'll pop up as is an NFT asset. So you can put it in there and it'll allow you to all of your cards actually equate to one NFT asset.
Okay. So you... Jesus,
we can walk Christ. It through.
So ridiculous that I need to go through that process in order to like figure it out that I have to export the wallet. Dude, this is ridiculous.
It's really not hard, but I'm just going to say this. This is why the ratio of gold to cards was so high on the weekend. And it was like 5 gold per 1 card is because people got to this stage.
Oh man, a little unfortunate Wi-Fi, ladies and gentlemen. We got a frozen signal mid thought. I'm sure what she was about to drop was very valid. There we go. Okay. She'll be back. She'll be back. She's probably just realizing that the internet went out. Beyond that, Blast NFTs have continued to rally. We've seen multiple Blast NFTs hit a new all-time high yesterday. Easy, you've been buying a lot of Blast NFTs. How are you thinking about this ecosystem?
Yeah, it's rather interesting right now. I've been buying pretty aggressively, to be honest, because of a couple factors with like, I'm not going to be able to compete with the whales on Blur. I've accepted that. Like, that's totally fine at this point. I don't need to compete with them. But I think there's some like decent plays in here. I picked up 10 blast snipers at 0.07. So I'm in for 0.7 ETH. Like, not a small amount for most people on that, myself included. Like, I'm just kind of taking a swing on this. But I like the team behind blast snipers. They're blur users. They've built a blur farming bot as well, similar to Blastopians. And I think if we continue to see Blastopians trend higher, it's going to bring the entire ecosystem up with it. The other collection that I've been closely watching and am tempted to buy into is Crypto Valley Adventurers, purely in like the yield tokens down god awful. Like, this thing went from $20 to under a dollar at this point. But when I look at this compared to DeFi Kingdoms, the Gen 1 heroes, the first ever ones, were the assets that made millionaires in DFK, like DeFi Kingdoms. And that's what these are. These adventures, these spirits, these are all basic level ones. I mean, you look at the chart right now, it's up 0.1, almost a 40, almost a 50% run up in the last 36 hours. And I think that's because they just announced the gameplay for it. Crypto Valleys has also been notorious for the amount of gold that they've given out so far. And I think that that's a positive catalyst. And then on top of it, we haven't seen a game on either the multiplier section, which is another way to farm blast, or for the lottery winner. So that's like the other area I'm looking right now is Crypto Valley gaming assets, because I think you're going to be able to hit a multiplier with it. I think the game is actually going to lead to higher price action because it's the only way that users can get unlocked yield. And then I also think that we're going to be able to see a potential lottery winner out of a game.
Well, yeah, I mean, love to hear it. It's been it, Clemente?
I got a counter take.
Let's go. So
Easy's been buying, and we saw yesterday, we saw Blastopians hit a new all-time high of 0.42 ETH. What we were seeing basically, Pio, is people were FOMOing into Blastopians because they're the consensus number one NFT collection. They probably go to one ETH. But what was interesting is basically everyone's buying now to get the Blast Gold jackpot, basically. So they're buying in to get a share of the Blast Gold airdrop, which will probably be like $300-$500, which for an asset worth $1,200, that's not bad at all. What I'm looking at here, and what I should have done yesterday when these were at 0.42, is I wanted to short these. I wanted to short the Blastopians at 0.42 on Wasabi, because my thought process would be, if and when they win the jackpot, everyone's just going to dump these Blastopians afterwards, and I'm going to make that sweet cash. So the play would actually be, if you really want to get crazy with it, you buy both. You buy the Blastopian, and then you short it on Wasabi. You get the jackpot, and then you're farming gold. You're getting all the good stuff. But yeah, this is something I would consider doing.
Clemente, go one level crazier. Fractionalize it. Put it in the Wasabi vault. So now you're getting Wasabi points, gold, blast points, potential upside on Blastopians, and you're shorting your own assets, essentially a covered put. So now you're hitting five different things, and 99% of people have no idea what the hell we're talking about. Yeah. So that's extremely bullish.
Well, and just very quickly on that trade, Clemente, I was listening to the Modern Market Space, and Legendary was saying that was a really good idea yesterday, but today it's harder because the liquidity on shorting that isn't really there. So that opportunity is now gone. But yesterday it was a great idea.
Clemente's out here telling me to buy the thing and then is going and shorting it. Yo,
I never told you to buy Blastopians at 0.4.
I didn't buy it at 0.4. I bought it at like 0.25 or whatever it is.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Just keep holding. Keep holding. But I also took a 5x leveraged long on Blur, and I'm down 25%. So my advice is not necessarily top notch.
I do want to clear this up. Someone said if a Blastopian stake, you won't hit the lotto. That's incorrect, because you can stake it and still win.
But also, it's like even the founder, I was talking to them yesterday, he like doesn't really know. It's pretty clear. Like,
but
he was like,
Wasabi staked pack one with pack.
Yeah, but it was also like, there's a bunch of complicated stuff with it basically in there, because there's the fractionalized stuff. Anyways, what was funny though was like, basically from the comments, I gathered that like, we're just at the mercy of Pac-Man right now. Like, you know, he's probably just choosing these. Let's be honest. So we're
absolutely, bro. What fantasy top the most talked about blasting that brought in 18,000 users in 36 hours wins immediately after Pac-Moon wins, who brought in 40,000 holders? You're going to sit here and tell me that this guy's not sitting there just like, all right, these guys are doing really well. Let's slap that one in there. Okay.
You have to. It's funny to me that you have to do that. It's just funny to me that they're presenting it like a lottery, but it's okay. That's totally fine.
Go on, Clemente.
The only thing I was going to say is what was interesting with the blast part is Ray brought up that all the jackpots that have won so far, Pac-Man owns all of them. So Pac-Man has went on a shopping spree last week. He also bought a Blastopian. He owns the Olay token, and I think he owns one more. So Ray was basically saying it has to be one of these three that's next. So I'm just going to allocate.
Just be careful on that, because he owns the Olay token because he bought a share, I think, of Cyrus's room. And when you buy shares, you automatically get airdropped the Olay token. So I don't think he went out and bought extra. But the way I'm thinking about this is, okay, one, I think there's analytics behind it, but I don't think it's like provably favorable in a way where they always show you the open source code. I do think there is potentially he's kind of scrolling and picking, but I do think people should think about this as verticals, and it's not random, right? So Fantasy Top would be like almost like it's social and gaming kind of. Olay would be SocialFi as well. He's going to hit GambleFi and he's going to hit gaming. And I think people need to be thinking of this as verticals and the projects which got the most gold allocation, which is why I like Yield, because Crypto Valleys had a huge allocation of gold. At one point, they did have a lot of positive mindshare. Maybe that's gone away, but I would have that on my bingo card, well, sorry, jackpot card as a potential player, given you've got the 8 squares.
Anything else? Oh, go ahead, Nick.
This is just pissing me off. Like it's the amount of like sort of pseudo strategy taking place.
It's fun though. Like at least there's something. At least like what was interesting over the weekend was talking to different people, and everyone has different strategies that they've thought out. It's better for me than like trying to buy an NFT and hope the founder does something in the next. My mic's all screwed up. Sorry. Anyways.
Interesting. I was
just going to comment too that Clemente's best content ever was actually that video stream that he did. And now you can't even get the audio to work. Right as I was going to give you high praise for what a quality stream you did with just the best information we've seen from you.
It was definitely cool. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, we will resume discussing Pack and Fantasy Top and all this blast action, I'm sure, in tomorrow's show while this takes the attention of the crypto and NFT space. But we are joined by a very special guest now. He is the founder of the Mad Lads NFT Collection and the Backpack Exchange. He's an ex-software engineer from Apple before leaving after he learned about the Ethereum white paper. Absolutely love that little fun fact. And he's one of the biggest early Solana advocates and a leading blockchain developer, the one and only Armani Ferrante. Armani, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So look, we have a lot to talk about with you. To give a little context, you initially raised $20 million to build Backpack Exchange, largely from FTX. You worked at FTX. You lost a large portion of that funding when FTX collapsed, forced you to go into, quote, cockroach mode for months. You know, fast forward to today, Backpack recorded over $1 billion in 24-hour volume last Saturday. So I'd love to know, what is the biggest lesson that you learned from the FTX collapse, seeing it from the inside in many ways, and how did it provide inspiration for you in building Backpack and the Mad Lads NFT collection?
Oh, that's a great question. What was the biggest lesson? Oh, there's so many lessons to be learned. I think the biggest lesson is ultimately, if you can't easily explain something, if you can't easily like articulate why something is the way it is, it doesn't matter, you know, how, you know, smart or complicated kind of the person explaining the thing is. If you can't easily digest it, then probably something is off. And I think that is maybe a super distilled takeaway that you can apply to anything, but certainly you can apply it to FTX.
And I'm assuming that's in reference to Sam Bankman-Fried, maybe in some ways.
Yeah, I think you can apply to tons of stuff, right? You can certainly apply it to just user assets and the whole kind of debacle. But yeah, I think if I had to pick one thing, that's probably it.
Sure. And we're going to dig into Backpack and into Mad Lads, but just broadly speaking about Solana, you've been a longtime Solana advocate. I'd love to know how you think about where Solana is at now, culture-wise, compared to where it was at before. We saw, obviously, a colossal run-up the previous bull cycle, followed by the FTX collapse, Solana's association with Sam Bankman-Fried pushing it down to $8. And then now, you know, being back up and seeing a thriving ecosystem, yet again, a full separation from any FTX stigma. How do you think about the culture now compared to the culture then?
I think it was a crucible moment. I think a lot of people talked about this, but if you're building decentralized systems, you need to decentralize not only at the kind of technological level, but also at the kind of cultural level. And, you know, it was either sink or swim. You know, the network could have died. It should have died. But it had the kind of the fortitude and the substance and the community and the conviction from everybody involved to kind of keep going. And I think now it's just better off as a result. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise. So it was obviously a horrible kind of year and you know, couple months for a lot of folks for a million different reasons. But in terms of where the network's at today, it's stronger than ever.
Are you actually concerned on that front with you have Backpack, which I believe is built on Solana. Although, how many chains does Backpack operate on? And then separately, do you have any concerns about the network right now? Do you think that Fire Dancer is going to resolve all of the issues that we experienced more recently with all the meme coin mania? Like, where do you think we're at with that?
Yeah, so first question. Backpack currently supports Solana, it supports Bitcoin. We're releasing ETH in the next week. So we basically hope to support as many chains and L2s as possible. In terms of, you know, where Solana is at currently, I think the way you have to ask that question is to realize that it's trying to solve a problem that's never been solved before. It's like flying, it's like before kind of, you know, any planes have flown. The level of load that the system deals with is several orders of magnitude higher than any other system like ever in history, like full stop, end of story. And so the problems that you deal with are just different. They're just, it's the frontier. And anybody that's ever built anything, anybody that's written any code will tell you that, well, of course the thing crashes in production. It's like almost hilarious that's like even a question thing. And every big service that has taken over the world has crashed a million times. Twitter continues to crash. Obviously, like blockchains are a different animal. The stakes are higher. You're dealing with value. The whole kind of value prop is to kind of this thing that never goes down. But there's no like law of physics that's violated that says Solana won't work. And until there's such a physical law that says that it won't work, I think you have to keep solving the engineering problems one by one. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, this very simple way to think about it is the kind of high level architecture sound? Is the way that the system being built like correct relative to other systems? And the main thing that you need that Solana gives you that very few other chains give you is parallel transaction processing. That's a bunch of technical gibberish, but the way to think about it is simple. When you use your computer, do you want one Chrome tab or do you want 10 Chrome tabs? If I said, hey, you can use Chrome, but you can't use Spotify, would that be okay? And the answer is like, obviously no. Like you use multiple applications, you have multi-cores, you have multiple threads, you have multiple processes going on at any given time. And that's how modern computing works. And this is, I think it's funny because it's like it's almost like a hot take, but it, like to anybody that's in the software industry, it's like the most like blatantly obvious thing in the world. It's like, yeah, of course you're gonna have parallel processing in any blockchain runtime, and anything that doesn't will eventually go extinct. And there's some exceptions, like, you know, there's like Celestia and what Ethereum's pivoting to, which is like, you know, being a settlement layer and not an execution layer. And there's nuance in this conversation. But, you know, any kind of next generation blockchain is going to have this property. Solana was the first one that went to market in production that had parallel processing. And now, it's like, you know, it was kind of hot take now. And now it's kind of going to be obvious in hindsight. You see Monad spinning up, which is going to be the EVM kind of parallel kind of a virtual machine. You have, you know, Sui, Aptos, all these kind of next generation blockchains that are kind of leaning in on this. But yeah, to get back to your question, you know, this stuff's hard. It's never been done before. Shit's happening because like so many people are using it, and that's like a beautiful thing. And like, yeah, we should solve the problems, but we shouldn't just like, you know, throw our hands up and be like, oh, this is impossible. It's like, no, it's hard. Like we went to the moon, we'll get blockchains to work.
Very well put. Nick, any follow-up questions on that?
No, I think that was well stated. I mean, I have questions about Backpack specifically. Yeah.
Let it fly, Nick. Let it fly. Let's go.
Hey, congratulations on having $1 billion. In daily volume, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize the extent of how active Backpack is at this point in terms of activity. Hey, where is all that action coming from? And also, what does the onboarding flow look like for a user? who's operating on Backpack. My understanding is it's like essentially on chain sex, and congratulations on having that as well.
Yeah. So a couple things. So firstly, like, where are our users? So we very intentionally moved out over here to Asia because we went to our users. Basically, the large majority of our kind of user base is in Asia. And so if you're kind of, we very intentionally went outside of crypto Twitter and to acquire users, because I think that's where a lot of the growth is. And so we have a truly kind of international team. We have folks from Japan, folks from the US, folks from India, folks from the UK, folks from Canada, folks from China. It's like kind of folks from the UAE, Bulgaria. It's kind of crazy, the team that we've assembled. And so I think we've had a really kind of, I guess, an unfair advantage in terms of like international growth, where we've just been focusing kind of all over kind of the world. We have this like kind of internal goal in our minds where we want to get to like 95% of the world's GDP by the end of the year. And that's like a lofty goal, and it's really hard. And like, maybe we don't do it, but like we're pushing really hard, and I think we'll get close in terms of like the percent of the population that we can serve users and like residents. I think, we have folks all around the world, and it's been awesome. In terms of like the user kind of experience and onboarding journey. So it's not exactly on chain in the way you would normally think. So it's not a smart contract like Uniswap. It's not like Jupiter, where there's these smart contracts on Solana. It's an independent system by itself, in the same way that like Coinbase is its own system. It's just that we built the system with a lot of from scratch, with a lot of modern kind of crypto techniques, just from like, we've been in the industry for a while. We kind of like know how to build these things in a pretty modern way. And so like every transaction, every trade, for example, that goes through the exchange is signed with a, you know, cryptographic ED25519 key. This is something that this is what you use to kind of assign a transaction on Solana. So you can actually replay the entire state and cryptographically verify that the state is exactly kind of what you think it is. So when you look at your balance, you're like, oh yeah, you know, this, I'm not getting like rugged or whatever. This actually is my balance. And so that's kind of like the goal with it, is like to create that type of replayability and auditability, and then, you know, layer on a bunch of kind of modern kind of cryptography, like, you know, multi-party computation for the custody and zero knowledge proofs, which was something we're working on right now. That's not live in production, but something we're kind of super excited to bring to market. There's a lot of nuance there, but that's the high level overview.
So can an external person also view those transactions? Because to me, that was like kind of one of the key things. You know, there was like one of the biggest issues with a lot of these things is a lack of transparency from a lot of the pre-existing centralized exchanges dating back to like Mt. Gox era and stuff like that, which was like, okay, well, we need to resolve that. This seemed like a solution because FTX obviously, was able to undermine everything through moving finances out of the actual exchange when it was actual user funds. What degree of auditability can a third party have associated with your exchange?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I wish there was one like single answer that was like sexy and just be like, oh, this is the silver bullet. But the answer is like, it's a multidimensional problem with like multiple solutions. So like the first thing is just proof of reserves. Like just like look at my balances and like tell me they're correct. So like I can do a proof where I can like basically look at my balances for every day of the year, or that's the goal at least, and be like, all right, yeah, that's correct. And you have this distributed verification where we're all on the call and we all kind of open up our wallet and we all kind of do this check. And because we all do this check, we all agree that the state is correct. And we check that against the wallets on chain and we're all Gucci or whatever. Now this has a problem in that it's backwards looking, and maybe you can say, okay, well, you do it, you know, once a day and that's good. You know that the exchange isn't dipping in users' funds or whatever. But it's more nuanced than that. One of the kind of key value propositions of an exchange is the fiat component, right? It's the fact that you have bank accounts. It's this top of funnel. It's literally the thing that connects the traditional financial economy into the crypto economy. And so you also have to deal with banks. And so you also need to deal with auditability from a fiat perspective. And so you need a proper accounting team, right? This is like, I think what Coinbase has done really well. And this is why being public is actually super valuable from a centralized exchange point of view, is because you need all this very sophisticated financial processes and operations built into the company like a proper financial institution. And I know it's not like super cool to say that or whatever, because it's like, you know, crypto and like, I don't know, magic, you know, fairy dust or whatever, but you actually need this if you have bank accounts with user money in it. This is super important, right? If you wire money into your exchange, you need people looking at this stuff. And so you need like an entire team around this and obviously all the prudential supervision from like, you know, regulators around the world. In terms of the exchange state itself, that is not publicly verifiable. And this is for a simple reason, because nobody wants their balances public. I would love for it to be open source or whatever and for anybody to run it. But the reality is that like people don't actually want that. You ask yourself the question, do you want your Coinbase account to be like public? And the answer is like, I don't know, probably not. And so the only kind of people that can replay all the state and actually verify the state integrity is going to be like the permissioned set of validators. Right now, it's just us. You can imagine a regulator doing that. Whether you like a regulator or not, it's like maybe an independent question. But the system is set up for that. So anybody can go in and answer the question, you know, why did this person get liquidated? Why did this trade go through, et cetera? And you can actually see step by step what happened. And so I think that's a pretty awesome property. It's a multidimensional problem. There's not a single thing. There's a bunch of other important stuff like, you know, corporate governance and stuff like that I'm not even getting into, that is also super important and shouldn't be underestimated. But, you know, these things are complicated and you have to have a really comprehensive solution if you really are going to solve the problem.
Well, not having the user funds in a different company bank account, like I remember FTX had Alameda was storing the funds prior to FTX even having a bank account, which is a whole other thing, and setting up localized bank accounts for operations is a whole other issue. But anyways, it sounds like you all are successfully tackling all these issues, which is quite an accomplishment to even go from, you said to have the world, 95% of the world's GDP able to, I think what you're really saying is 95% of the world's population. Like what do you mean by GDP on the, like, I don't even, like, one is to quantify velocity of money and transactions. Is that what you're saying? Like, we want trillions of dollars in activity floating across this exchange.
It's a bit of a nuanced point, but the way we think about things is in terms of GDP, because it's all about kind of bringing in kind of capital into the crypto economy. So that's like the metric that we care about, and we want to get the maximum amount of people, the maximum amount of economic value flowing through the system and bringing it on chain or into the exchange itself. We think in terms of GDP as like, you know, what's all the value in the world and how do we get it into crypto? So that's kind of why we pick that number.
Any follow-up on that, Nick?
No, I was just interested in where that metric was coming from. I have separate stuff for unrelated, but
I was going to ask Armani, you know, one topic that I'm super fascinated by as an organization that has, you know, almost like a traditional business, right? Our current business, and then the kind of NFT side of the business. You have that too. It's all crypto though, but you can, at this point, you could say crypto exchange and crypto wallet is basically a traditional business. There's proven 100% product market fit. These types of businesses are going to exist X number of years from now. These are, you know, infrastructure needs in the crypto ecosystem. How do you think about the relationship between the platform, like, you know, the exchange and the wallet versus the NFTs?
Yeah, it's a super good question. So we're really lucky. We're really lucky that there's two products that every NFT holder has. They have a wallet and they have an exchange account. So we are really fortunate where we just have to build great stuff for Mad Lads, and in theory, you know, we can do well as a business. And so it's a really symbiotic relationship in a way that I think we're just really fortunate to have that. I think it's, you know, a lot of kind of, there's a lot of more experimental stuff that people do with NFTs that are really challenging. And they're kind of trying to forge ahead in these other areas. But it's awesome, honestly. It's just like having like these incredible people that we just build for, and they give you feedback and support you in a really incredible way. So yeah, it's awesome.
that's like the community part that you're talking about, the community of Mad Lads holders that then become the users of the platform products. And that gives you kind of a different angle than, say, Coinbase, that, you know, at this point is a publicly traded company, Binance, you know, huge organization. There isn't like an NFT community. And it's almost like if you went back 12 years while Brian Armstrong and everybody was building Coinbase to actually have that live feedback loop with a community of people that are really excited about what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I tell everybody this. People look at me in one of two ways, especially investors. They look at me like I'm an alien, and they're like, "What are you doing? Like, you're an idiot. Stop it. Like, you know, bail. Like, why are you doing Mad Lads?" Or they're like, "Oh my God, this is awesome. I totally get it. Like, keep going." And I firmly believe that, like, you know, this is either the worst idea ever, like no founder should ever do an NFT project, or they're gonna write like business books about this and they're gonna teach it on MBAs or whatever. But it's a weird thing because, like, you can't just like create an NFT project and like have it work. It's like, there's no like NFT fairy dust that says like, you create a thing with a candy machine and you get a Fiverr artist and it kind of just works. It's like, there's a lot of just genuine, I guess, I don't know how else to describe it, other than just like love and blood, sweat and tears that goes into it. It's like, to build like a real NFT project and a real community, it takes a lot of like emotional effort. And I think a lot of artistry and taste and creativity that, in a way that I think a lot of soulless corporations just don't have. You see this all the time where, you know, you have like, I don't want to like dig on any company or whatever, but like, you know, like Starbucks or whatever, they come in, they're like, I'll do something with NFTs. And it's like, so they'll get me users and all. It's like that meme with the guy with the skateboard and he's in school. It's like, you know, it's like, so I'm cool or whatever. Like, but it doesn't work, right? It's because it's not genuine. It's not like internally consistent. And so I think that's one thing we've tried to do with Mad Lads, to just be like super just genuine, and there's like no BS, and, you know, we'll tell people what we think, and we try to create a community we'd like to be in. And it's kind of, I don't know, simple as that.
How do you guys, like from an operational standpoint, separate or not separate like Mad Lads and Backpack? Like, are they two separate divisions? Do you have just an NFT team? How do you think about all that?
Yeah, no. So we've always done all of like the Mad Lad storytelling through the product. If you went through kind of the mint experience, the whitelist experience, the first Rickroll, we all of this stuff was done through the Backpack wallet. The Backpack wallet and Mad Lads is literally the same people, the same company. There's no like separation. It's like, that is us. and so like, we did everything as simple as like, we built these like, you know, Minecraft 3D kind of games where you had to like find the invite code for the whitelist. We did these like kind of, we did an XNFT where it was like you had to like race, like, it's like a pixel kind of moon game where you had to like, you know, speed run a video game. You know, we did like AI generated noise guessing games. We did a bunch of stuff, just like a bunch of, we literally did like an MMO World of Warcraft, like boss battle, for the mint. I don't know if you guys saw it. There's like some cool videos on it where there's like a health bar and you have to like, you know, kill the boss. And there's like a live like Twitch like chat on the side. And it was all inside the wallet. And all that storytelling, all of that lore, all of that like cultural equity, is the only word I would use to describe it, that was built into the community because of, I think, all those experiences that like we like just collectively had. And so I think that's always been our kind of mode of operation. It's like, we build product, we're a real company. You know, we're not trying to like, you know, pull any fast ones on anybody. We have specific goals. We want to make money as a business. But we also have a community and like this decentralized brand that we try to build awesome stuff for. And we're just lucky that there's a symbiotic relationship, right? They all have wallets. And so it's been an awesome kind of way to operate.
Absolutely. Oh, good.
I was going to say, how do you feel about like the evolution of value that you provide to people with NFTs or not? Like, what, like, I mean, we've been seeing like the sort of the transition of like Yuga's going through its own cycle right now. NFTs as a whole, and I think sort of market perception on what it is. For some, it's like, you know, right now it feels like make it a meme coin, essentially, like come as close to sort of like just a cultural, not utility, art style, like cultural art, whatever you want to call it. Like, how do you think of the evolution of sort of the Mad Lads as a project? And I don't know if, I mean, how much you think about price itself, obviously, like as a founder, that can't be like the driving factor, But I do know that for a lot of people, even Kevin Rose had mentioned, who's not like an icon of NFT. Well, actually he is, frankly, in terms of like the stress that that puts on terms of like, what is the development? What is the value? So how do you think about like, what are you delivering to holders of the NFTs and what, like, how do you feel about that?
I think we've been really intentional about this from the beginning, where we've been very consistent with our messaging, almost to our detriment, where from the beginning, you know, we spent, before even minting anything, we literally spent probably the better part of a year building product and building relationships and community. Even 2-3 years before that, just like building on the network a lot of in the early days. So when we kind of got to our mint moment, we were already in a really good position where we weren't just like random people that people were kind of wanting to, you know, hang out with or whatever. There's like a lot of trust and just like mutual, I think just deserved respect just by virtue of like, I don't know, just like doing stuff. And we've been super consistent from day one. You know, there's, you go look at the tweets, they're all say there's, we expect nothing, you know, not to, there's no utility at all, the artistic things that you're talking about, you know, it's a rug, send it to zero. If you're buying this thing, with the expectation that you're going to, you know, go to Valhalla and be, you know, super rich, like you are going to be really, you're not going to like this outcome. We will actively not seek out that like behavior. We're a business. We have kind of our own goals. And we think that, you know, we can build a really cool kind of cultural kind of, brand and build kind of, the right kind of, I guess, set of values that will create outcomes that people want to be a part of. Whether that's like, you know, meeting people that they otherwise wouldn't have met, whether that's, you know, teaming up with partner projects, you know, this is one phenomenon you see with Mad Lads all the time. It's like airdrops coming out of nowhere. Like a lot of them that we just have no, we didn't even know they're coming. Like, you know, I think you saw that like Dimension was like one of the first ones that really just like blew my mind, where they just gave up all these tokens to this, you know, this protocol. I had no idea who they were. They didn't ask me for anything. And I think that was really a testament to the values that I think the community was able to kind of create for itself. So it's kind of a mixture of things, but it honestly, it boils down to just like doing cool stuff with cool people. And it doesn't matter what that stuff is. It could be anything. It could be building a company, it could be creating a lifestyle brand. It could be, you know, doing backflips on a snowboard or whatever, or, you know, building an exchange. That doesn't really matter. To me, it's NFTs is all about just tokenized culture. And the way I think about value for tokenized culture, it's simple. I try to graph out kind of what is the set of eyeballs on a logo over a period of time. And that's like, in my view, kind of brand equity. So like people talk about the attention economy or whatever, you know, whether you want to be on social media or whether you build a company or whether you're on TikTok or whether you're on, you know, YouTube or, you know, whether you're sponsoring, you know, a Super Bowl ad or whatever. It's all about attention. It's all about brand equity. And NFTs, honestly, it's no different than building, you know, a lifestyle streetwear brand. It's no different than being a musical artist. It's no different than being a YouTuber. It's just different forms of marketing and different form factors in our own weird kind of subculture and like crypto Twitter and that sphere, but it's all the same thing. And so kind of, it looks different, it feels different, but like the skills and the core of like what makes it special, it's all about the culture. It's all about the people. It's all about what's happening. And so, yeah, I that's how I think about it. And I think Mad Lads is kind of reflective of that.
When you brought it up earlier, I was going to compare the NFT side to like an underground band. And that really is like what it is. Also, we're just still so early in this. And I know people like hate it when I say that, but nobody understands NFTs in the whole world. And 90%+ of people that are all in on crypto and NFTs also don't understand NFTs. It's like nobody has an understanding of this stuff. So it's so hard. Signal has a question. Then I just have a couple of questions about, you know, Backpack versus Mad Lads. But Sig, please go ahead.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Aman. It was actually a follow-up on what you were talking about earlier about the challenges of building on Solana. And it reminded me of F1, like 20, 30 years ago, where the cars were just, they weren't janky, but they weren't even close to being as robust as they are today. And they solved that because teams like Ferrari just decided to invest an enormous amount of capital, acquire the best drivers, and just work at their technology. And in the end, they became the number one teams. Like looking at like blockchains, is it the same problem that you're trying to solve in that it requires a huge amount of capital to become the number one blockchain? Or are there other differentiators which could essentially bring other blockchains to rival Solana?
Yeah, I think there's different elements that make blockchain special. So foundationally speaking, it's all about, well, what does the tech do? How fast can it go? How decentralized is it? What's the latency to land a transaction? And that's kind of the foundation. And then on top of this, it's like, okay, well, given those technological kind of achievements, what can you build? The first thing on Solana that really captured everybody's imagination was all about DeFi, and it was all about the on-chain order book. Solana really went to market in 2020 off of the back of DeFi summer. There was like kind of the crazy Uniswap, SushiSwap kind of thing. Everybody was farming vegetables. I don't know if you remember those times on Ethereum. It was kind of a magical moment. But everybody was thinking about what's the next thing. Gas fees are so high. And the Solana unlock was like, oh shit, we have 10x the throughput, 10x the latency. It was like 100x, 1000x actually. And oh crap, we can do on-chain order books. And then you saw this flood of developers that from people that never looked at crypto before. They came in from more traditional kind of financial places. You know, they came in through like Citadel and these HFT firms and, you know, all these, you know, people that like to trade basically. And it was all about DeFi. And then eventually that morphed into NFTs. But it was all about, you know, the unlocks from the technology. But then once you have those new use cases being built, then you get another layer on top of it. And once you have the new NFTs, you started seeing this like really rich cultural environment kind of blossom on the back of the new use cases. You know, you had candy machines in the first kind of, you know, you had the Galactic Geckos and the Solana Valley Cows. That was like my first NFT ever. I got rugged. Shout out to Solana Valley Cows. Don't buy one. I don't recommend it.
I've not heard that name in so long. That name is like the throwback. Solana Valley is a throwback. You had the Beavers too on Exchange Art. Man, dude, different time. It was a different
world. Yeah. You know. But yeah, then you had the cultural environment that was built on it that made it really special, right? And all these things kind of collectively came together to make Solana what it is today. And so when you're thinking about, well, what's going to happen with new L1s, I think you have to think about, well, how do they recreate this type of phenomenon? And it's not going to be exactly the same. They'll do it in new ways. I think, you know, it's going to be harder and harder and harder to get 10x improvements on the core underlying technology. I think it's still probably doable, you know, whether it's on the developer experience or whether it's on latency or throughput or whatever. I think there's probably another 10x out there somewhere, whether it's Fire Dancer or another chain, like who knows. I think it'll still happen. So that's one way of doing it. The next way, which I think is much easier, is going to be all about, well, who's got the killer kind of app? You know, if Instagram came onto Solana tomorrow or came onto Sui or came onto Cosmos or whatever, you know, all tribalism goes out the door and everybody goes to the Instagram chain, right? Because like Instagram's awesome. Everybody loves Instagram. The whole world uses Instagram. And it's really easy to get caught up in like crypto Twitter and like our weird kind of part of the world. But like at the end of the day, like there's not that many people that use crypto and there's a much bigger world out there. So I firmly believe that we're still at the starting line for all of this stuff. And there's no reason, like all the existing network effects and all the existing kind of advantages in my view are kind of just like, yeah, there's some. You know, Ethereum's got some, Bitcoin's got plenty. I mean, Bitcoin's got a whole other conversation. I think that's an enormous, obvious network effect. But in terms of these application ecosystems, we're at the starting line. And so it's anybody's game. It's all about kind of who can build the killer app. And I think we have a lot of exciting kind of, you know, roads ahead of us as a result.
Armani, I know you're going to have to go soon. Just a couple quick questions. First one is like an crypto native entrepreneur question. Do you all keep the royalty revenue that you earn from Mad Lads in Solana, or do you convert to stablecoins?
Oh, great question. Yeah, we convert it, continuously.
Yeah, makes sense. And then what does the revenue breakdown look like between like Mad Lads versus Backpack, you know, the exchange and the wallet?
Oh, In terms of what, like numbers, like percentages?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to disclose the exact numbers, obviously, but like, yeah, I'd be very curious the percentages.
Oh, yeah, it's like one or two orders of magnitude. Like the Mad Lads revenue is like not super important. Yeah.
Makes sense. And last question, you touched on it proactively. I didn't know you were going to bring it up. What, as a very notable Solana based entrepreneur, builder, founder, whatever, what do you think of Bitcoin? Like, what is your position on Bitcoin? How do you think about Bitcoin compared to Solana, for example?
Oh, I think Bitcoin is a totally different beast. Bitcoin is, you know, the most important meme in the industry. It's the most decentralized blockchain. It's the best brand. It's the most important asset, hands down, full stop, bar none, end of story. There's nothing even close to Bitcoin. You can measure this by like, you pick your metric, and Bitcoin as a general asset, I think is wins. But they're totally kind of complementary pieces of tech. They do totally different things. Solana is not trying to compete with Bitcoin in any meaningful way, and vice versa. And so I think that's what makes it like such a like a compelling, I guess, barbell, to use that word, where they're totally different, polar opposite side of the spectrum. And so they're super complementary. And so, yeah, I think that's why I think a lot of people from both ecosystems and communities really like the other.
Makes a lot of sense. Last thing, was there anything that we didn't ask you about that you think is super worth discussing?
Tons of stuff. Nothing off the top of my head. I don't know. There's a million things that are worth discussing, but no, you had awesome questions. This is awesome.
Cool, man. Well, hey, look, ladies and gentlemen, the founder of Backpack and Mad Lads NFT project on Solana, Armani Ferrante. Armani, people should obviously check out Mad Lads, check out Backpack. Anywhere else you want to send people?
Yeah, Backpack, Mad Lads, Twitter, backpack.exchange, you know, go to the iOS and Android app stores, you know, shill all the things. But yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, man. I know it's late for you, so we really appreciate you making the time, and hope to have you on again in the future.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Have a good one, man. Ladies and gentlemen, Armani Ferrante from Mad Lads and Backpack Exchange. Wonderful conversation there. Look, we do this show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time each and every week. We'll be back tomorrow. Show's available on Apple and Spotify podcasts, YouTube. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button, X platform video, and of course, Twitter Spaces, where many of you are listening right now. We hope you enjoyed the show. We will be back tomorrow. Make sure you check out Mad Lads Backpack Exchange. Give Armani a follow. What a great conversation we had with him. And yeah, big shout out to everyone that came today.